One way to step back and try to make sense of this pandemic is literature. And it turns out one of the first great poems in English was written in the wake of the Black Death in the 14th century, which was estimated to have killed half of Europe. We're talking about the Canterbury Tales, a collection of stories by Geoffrey Chaucer. They're timeless. Some tales are still referenced in Hollywood today. And on a recent trip to London, I looked up some medieval scholars and asked them about this. And they all pointed me to one particular tale in the Canterbury Tales that's directly relevant to pandemic. And since the Canterbury Tales story begins in a pub, that is where I start, with a pint of ale, and an English professor who has a glass of red wine.
Hello, I'm Sarah Sarley. I teach medieval literature at King's College London. So we are here, we're in the George. So this is a 16th century half-time.
I meet up with Sarah Sarley, Chaucer expert at the George Inn and Pub. It's old, even for London.
Lots of low ceilings, oak beams everywhere. And we are here because it's just a few steps from the Tabard Inn, which is where Chaucer's pilgrims set off from.
The Tabard Inn was a real inn back in the 14th century when Chaucer lived. It's in a part of London called Southwark, just below London Bridge. And this is where the Canterbury Tales stories begins, with a group of travelers, also known as pilgrims.
There's a group of 29 pilgrims, a very mixed group. It starts with the knight and his squire and their servant. We've got several members of the clergy. There's the wife of Bath, who everybody remembers, who's been married five times.
The concept of pilgrimage, a spiritual trip, is a big thing in Chaucer's day. It's right after the Black Death, a horrific bubonic plague that keeps recurring every so often, kind of like Omicron. And the pilgrims in this story, they head east from London to Canterbury Cathedral. Why? Well, to perhaps save their souls.
There's a deal in medieval Catholicism that most people will go to purgatory after they die. But there are ways to shorten this. You know, there are certain holy sites you can visit. The pilgrimage to Canterbury, for example, is a way to shorten your time in purgatory.
Sounds rather worth it, but it is a long trip. So our pilgrims, well, they could sing songs, I suppose, but the owner of the inn and pub has a better idea.
The innkeeper who is serving them, called Harry Bailey, who was a real innkeeper, he was really the landlord of the Tabard Inn, Chaucer must have known him. He gets so enthused by the company that he suggests that he will join them on the pilgrimage to Canterbury, and that on the way they will have a tale-telling competition.
Yay, storytelling contest. That's the Canterbury Tales. Now, let's pause for a bit of English class context. It's clear that this story is one of journeys, of new beginnings. Our travelers set out in the spring, in the month of April. Or as Chaucer would say it in Middle English, Aprile.
One that Aprile, with his shoeless suit, the drought of March, hath pierced to the root.
That's another Canterbury Tales scholar, Marion Turner of Oxford. Turner says the idea of new life, of a meaningful life, is a big theme of Chaucer's. After all, he lost several family members to the Black Death.
He saw lots of people die very young. And one of the things that Chaucer's really interested in is the cycles of life and death, which might sound very, very basic, but it's something that Chaucer deals with, I think, in really profound ways. This idea of how do you cope with tragedy, you know, that you have to deal with the inevitability of change. Everything dies and new things are born.
In Chaucer's England, it's being turned upside down. See, this horrific plague kills so many workers that it creates new openings, new opportunities for survivors up and down the social ladder. The hierarchy breaks down. And suddenly people from all walks of life begin crashing into one another, just like our motley group of pilgrims in the Canterbury Tales.
We're all fascinated by films or books where you manage to create an environment in which people who we don't imagine naturally coming together, they get together and we watch them as if, I mean, that's also, I guess, what's happening often in reality TV, isn't it? Put these people in a bubble and watch them.
As I hear you talk about it, is that why these other moments in the arts where we have this kind of collection of people who don't go together so often works? I don't know, The Breakfast Club for a movie from my era.
Each one of us is a brain and an athlete
and a basket case, a princess
and a criminal.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, I know. Really, Scott Tong? That is the best you can do? Throw out a Gen X film reference to a group of oddball American high schoolers in detention to an Oxford professor? But go Marion Turner. She gets the reference.
That's also the kind of detention of the Breakfast Club, which is, yeah, also my era. It's a really clever move. So that's exactly what we see in the Canterbury Tales.
So in the book, as the pilgrims walk, they take turns telling stories. And the story most connected to the pandemic is called The Pardoner's Tale. And for that, we bring in Anthony Bale, medieval studies scholar at the University of London. And he joins me a few meters away from the original Tabard Inn, where Chaucer's pilgrims began their trek.
They would also have been just steps away from Southwark Cathedral, which is where we're sitting now, and Borough Market, which was a medieval market, still a market, selling various kinds of produce. In this area, there was a prison, there were theatres, there were prostitutes' stews, brothels.
The pilgrim telling the pardoner's tale is a man who sells pardons for the forgiveness of sins. Remember we talked about shortcuts to heaven? Well, that's his business. And the pardoner begins this story, cliche alert, about three guys walking into a bar.
They're sitting in the pub, getting drunk, playing dice, and they hear a bell of a funeral passing. And they ask the boy in the pub, you know, serving boy, what's that? And the boy tells them that it's someone who was in the pub just days previously and died very, very rapidly.
There's a deadly pandemic out there, kind of like today.
And the boy says, death has 1,000 slain, this pestilence, he says to them. He explains it to them. And this provides a kind of motivation then for the three drunk young men, the rioters, as Chaucer calls them, to go out looking for death. They are going to go and slay death.
So to get revenge against death, these drunk losers wander outside into the pandemic. Not very smart. And they meet an old man who tells them, you can find death over there under that tree. So they go over there, and they don't find death. They find a jackpot.
They find 8 bushels of gold florins. Florin was a coin at the time.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's a life-changing amount of money, as people say.
And their mission goes off the rails. Our three drunkards now focus on greed. They settle under the tree, and they send one of the guys into town to buy food.
While he's away, the two remaining young men, spoiler alert, by the way, they decide that when the young one comes back, they'll stab him, and so they only have to share the money between 2 rather than 3.
Yep, more money for us.
Meanwhile, the youngest one who's off in town gets some wine, but he also gets some poison, and he adds it to the wine, and he decides he's going to kill the other two.
It's all this spy versus spy. Yeah.
Exactly. And the pardoner is a very brilliant storyteller, and he's built this up as a great moment of suspense, and he actually tells this bit in just a few lines. The young one goes back, they stab him. To celebrate, they drink the wine. All three are dead.
All three are dead. They go to find death, and death finds them. It's a fable of pandemic and choices. Kind of current.
And it's the people who don't pay attention to the pandemic that then suffer for it. I was in London throughout the pandemic and throughout the lockdowns, and there were people who weren't wearing masks. There were people who are still wearing masks. I know that there were restaurants that were secretly open during the pandemic, or pubs that were secretly open during the pandemic. So we had, I think, this quite precise scene that you have in The Pardoner's Tale.
A tale that is directly referenced in Harry Potter, says Marion Turner of Oxford.
This story was the inspiration of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Here's a clip from the 2010 movie.
They found their path blocked by a hooded figure. It was Death, and he felt cheated.
She has explicitly said that this was her inspiration, The Pardoner's Tale, where three brothers talk to Death, and Death gives them different gifts which don't necessarily turn out to be gifts. And one of them is the invisibility cloak, and one of them is the Elder Wand, and the other one is this special stone.
Did I mention Marion Turner is one cool English teacher?
It's an example of how Chaucer's stories continue to have huge and far-reaching influence today.
Which brings us back to our pub in South London, where our story and Chaucer's Canterbury Tales began, and to our medieval scholar Sarah Solly. And I ask her why she thinks the Canterbury Tales are still a thing.
Well, obviously there's the fart jokes.
She is well into her red wine at this point, as am I with my beer. But it's true. A couple of the Canterbury Tales drag us well into the English gutter.
You know, there is plenty of sex and fart jokes and lovely bits of daily life. But the structure of the Canterbury Tales as a whole is a very serious and ambitious attempt to understand the changes in society and to put them within a spiritual framework.
And that makes for some timeless stories and reflection in any pandemic, whether they're told in modern English or Chaucer's Middle English. And we'll go out with one last sample.
He hath a thousand slain this pestilence, and, maester, ere you come in his presence, may thinketh that it were necessary for to beware of such an adversary, baith ready for to meet him evermore. Thus taught me, me dam, I say no more.